Today should be a very interesting show. We have Michael P. Singer. He is the author of Snake Oil Science, How Xi Jinping Shut Down the World. He's got more information since he wrote that book. You can follow him now on Twitter, reinstated at Michael P. Singer, S-E-N-G-E-R. And his Substack is michaelsanger.substack.com. He has got a lot to tell us. This should be a very interesting conversation. Susan has, Michael's a low-key guy, but he got Susan quite worked up after her last interview. I don't think you've ever quite been the same, Susan, matter of fact. He's also been reporting on 100,000 messages between UK officials in 2020 and the techniques they were using to terrify. These words can barely come out of my mouth, to terrify the citizens, to cow them into submission, to cooperate with their interventions. Let's get right to it.
Our laws as it pertains to substances are draconian and bizarre. The psychopaths start this way. He was an alcoholic because of social media and pornography, PTSD,
love addiction,
fentanyl and heroin. Ridiculous. I'm a doctor, for Christ's sake. Where the hell do you think I learned that? I'm just saying, you go to treatment before you kill people.
I am a clinician. I observe things about these chemicals.
Let's just deal with what's real.
We used to get these calls on Loveline all the time.
Educate adolescents and to prevent and to treat.
If you have trouble you can't stop and you want to help stop it, I can help.
I got a lot to say. I got a lot more to say.
As always, we are watching your Restream chat and, of course, on Rumble with the Rumble Rants. And we have some of our usual suspects over there. And Twitter Spaces as well. I'm not sure if we'll have time for calls today. Hopefully, we'll have a minute or so to let you talk to Michael. As I said, Michael's an attorney. He's in San Francisco. And he wrote a book that Susan read, amongst other things, his interview as well, which got Susan, I don't think you've been quite right ever since then.
Nope.
And she's looking very much forward to this interview. Before we get into a reminder, tomorrow we have Dr. William Mackus here. Tuesday, I believe Thursday, we have Caleb, help me with this, the UK reproductive endocrinologist that's been in Twitter quite a bit, a little bit of heat lately. I want to give her a chance to sort of talk to us about her findings. I'm blanking on her name right off the top of my head. And Gad Saad on next Tuesday, and next Wednesday, Sasha Latapova. Caleb, you know who I'm talking about?
I'm trying to find it. That's the one name I don't have on my list right now. It was probably added over the weekend.
Yeah, gosh darn it. I'm sorry I brought it up, but I'm going to tell you in 1 second, I hope. It's on Thursday. I'm sorry to do this to everybody. Went to the wrong place, so I'm going to give up. But it's this Thursday. It's actually day after tomorrow. That's the coming schedule right there. Gosh darn it. This, give me 1 second. There it is. Her name is Dr. Vicky Male. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Dr. Vicky Male, Senior Lecturer in Reproductive Immunology. And she has some very strong opinions about vaccination during pregnancy. And she's one of the few people that has agreed to come on in here and give us her opinion, which I'm delighted to hear.
She was suggested by a Twitter follower when we were, saying, come on the show.
We were trying to get people to come in here, and
she's apparently the real deal.
She seemed like a very good scientist. But what I'm interested in is the literature she quoted was over the top positive, and I'm used to medical literature being a little more mixed, and so I sent her some other articles.
I'd like it to be positive.
And so I said, please respond to this stuff, and we'll talk about it so it should be a really interesting conversation.
Really quick, when you say that my life was changed from this book, mm-hmm. You also have, since we last spoke to Michael, you have changed so many of your opinions about what's going on.
That's true.
And some of that is because of this book.
Well, let's bring Michael P. Singer right in right now. Michael, welcome.
Thank you so much, Drew. Thank you for having me. Great to be back.
So welcome to our show. Welcome back to Twitter. So I'm glad you're there.
Glad to be back there as well.
Let's start with how I've changed. I think that's an interesting place to start. I was very naive. I wouldn't say I was... insulated or dumb about what's going on in China, but I was naive, I'd say. And since I last spoke with you, I've talked to a lot of people who were silenced on Twitter and other places like yourself. And one of the things, there were many headlines emerged from those conversations, but two big ones were, a lot of the pandemic's response was made up out of whole cloth. People in a room just going, 6 feet, that's it, it'll be 6 feet. Come on, let's just do that. And then foisted on the public and then on the world, which is the part that I have trouble getting my head around. But the other big headline was that many of their decisions came directly from their Chinese counterparts. Things like lockdown, our scientists were hoodwinked or something into believing that lockdown was, just saith the Lord, the one and only solution to COVID, SARS-CoV-2. Tell me what you know about that piece of the story.
That's right. And that's really kind of the focus of my work, is that sort of forensic aspect of where these policies came from. And really getting people to focus, especially on the very beginning of this entire story, thinking back to those initial lockdowns, which were the strictest and frankly did the most damage back in early 2020, because that's really where this entire narrative began. And that's really where China's biggest influence was, is in the very beginning, just setting that entire narrative that this virus was going to be treated with this unprecedented response that, you know, just has absolutely no precedent in the modern Western world. I mean, you think back to those initial days, just your initial impressions, how normal everything was in January and February, except for the news coming out of China about that brutal lockdown that was going on in Wuhan. And then suddenly, you know, just like that, you know, liberal democracy just kind of grinds to a stop. And just across the world, one country after another, it really just kind of imports this policy of lockdown that had absolutely no precedent in the modern Western world. It was not contained in any country's pandemic plan. They had some references to voluntary social distancing measures it might take. And that entire science of social distancing, it turns out the story of the origin of that science falls apart entirely as well. So that was within Western countries' pandemic plans, but it's kind of a shady vein of pseudoscience. And that's the story all on its own. The official story completely falls apart there as well. So the very beginning of how this all began is just, you know, the more you look at it, the closer you look at it, the more frightening it becomes, because everything we've been told about those initial policies just falls apart. You know, we were told that it was just this, it just happened. Everybody just decided to shut down. Of course, that's always kind of nonsensical when you actually stop and think about it, because a decision that big does not just happen. There's entire, you know, bureaucratic forces at work that get to that point. You know, every single character you look at, the information they were relying on from China, you know, their stories all kind of fall apart. And the reason that's so important is because really it's those initial lockdowns that set the entire narrative for everything that was to come. I mean, everything that happened after that, as you were saying, a lot of it was just a giant mess. They were coming up with these rules out of whole cloth. You know, one place the rules would be directly contradictory to another. You know, he had the arrows all over the floor. You had the plexiglass everywhere. It was all kind of silly and stupid, but it was all because of the lockdowns that convinced so much of the population, and leaders especially, that there was a super virus out there. Because so psychologically powerful, and so much of the public, suddenly there's this emergency announcement that we have to have these strict lockdowns, that, you know, this is going to do a lot of harm. This is going to destroy, you know, millions of lives. It's going to ruin, you know, half of small businesses out across the country didn't even recover, ruin everybody's mental health. But the super virus is so important that we have to do it. And sadly, you know, once they make that announcement, you know, people trust their government and they support it because they think like, oh, it's a big emergency. The government wouldn't be doing this unless there was some real super virus out there and there was a real health emergency. So they support this policy that does all this damage. But then we realize later down the road, when you study it, you realize this virus, everything we were told about the origin of it, we were told that, you know, was a super virus that, you know, everybody was falling over to their deaths in Wuhan. We got all the scary videos out of Wuhan, and somehow it jumped over to Italy and you know, it's killing people there, and all it jumps over to New York City. It's kind of this Hollywood theatrical outbreak story that falls apart entirely. And now, of course, now we have mountains of scientific evidence. This is actually circulating all over the world by fall of 2019. I mean, it was just everywhere. So this lockdown just had absolutely no, you know, moral or scientific or intellectual justification when you actually go back and look at it. But that was so powerful because it got so much of the population to endorse this policy. It caused so much devastation for absolutely nothing. At that point, people cannot psychologically turn back. They have to believe that there's this super virus that, you know, has just been ravaging just for years and years.
I have to tell you. Yeah, I have to tell you, I was doing a news local news broadcast for the first year of COVID, and one of the news directors came up to me like 6 months into the pandemic and went, "This is an extinction event for the human being, right? This where the humans will be extinct after this." I was like, "What? Where in the world did you get that idea?" My God, what have we done to people? My God.
Yeah.
They just have zero judgment about what this was. But okay, right. So now let's go back to those early days. As I recall, it was first there was the closure of flights from China, right?
Right.
And China had already ended domestic flights. Strangely, they were allowing international flights, which is a little bit of a hint of what was maybe going on there, but okay.
It turns out that story was actually a bit of propaganda as well. That story kind of falls apart. They were doing strange things. And this is something that it trips up China hawks as well. It trips up intelligent people all over the world because no regime really in the past has done this. The Chinese Communist Party is using negative propaganda. They know that their reputation around the world is terrible and that it'll never improve. And from what I've seen, they found that the best way to convince the world of facts that they want people to believe is to simply make themselves look bad. And so you get the story about how they canceled direct, domestic flights, even while they're letting people fly all over the world and spread this virus around everywhere. It's just nonsense. That story breaks down as well. And you get the stories about how, these poor Wuhan residents are just falling to the deaths in the streets, not getting the care they need. You know, that's just a lie as well. But it convinces everybody that now they got the scary virus and China let it spread everywhere and all, you know, shame on the Chinese Communist Party for doing that. But it's just nonsense. It was already everywhere around the world by fall 2019.
Is that maybe not the Chinese? I mean, I guess you must have some evidence that Chinese, the CCP, are the one propagating these stories. But isn't it possible that it's some anti-Chinese propaganda equally?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, I mean, the source of it gets completely mixed up there because you have some of that coming from folks who are really, you know, really anti-Chinese Communist Party, genuinely hawkish about China, you know, genuine resistance fighters. And they're like, you know, just anything that, you know, I really want to get these guys. And so they're generating the stuff as well. And, you know, we have no idea. And how much of those is controlled opposition because, you know, the Chinese Communist Party has controlled opposition forces all over the world. So, we, you know, going back to a lot of these stories, we have absolutely no idea, you know, to this day, was this genuinely somebody who just fudging facts a little bit because they really don't like China? Or was it the Chinese Communist Party using their controlled opposition forces to convince people of these things? I mean,
weird.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you more about that in a minute. So I want to take a little bit more time at the beginning of the pandemic again. So our federal government has a travel ban and then a 2 weeks to flatten the curve, right? That's sort of our policy. 2 weeks, flatten the curve, everyone cooperate, stay home for a little while. Then it, as my memory serves me, we have sort of unclear sort of messaging coming out of the White House, except Donald Trump is saying, calm down, everybody. It's going to be fine. Don't worry about it so much. I'm hearing good things about this hydroxychloroquine. I'm hearing good things about light being shot down people's lungs. And as soon as he said that, my state locked down. There was a code, and that didn't end for 2 years. So how much was Trump derangement syndrome or whatever that is, where people do the opposite of whatever his White House was saying?
So here in the United States, there was definitely a lot of that. And there's just no question, you know, blue states like here in California embrace more of this insanity, embrace more of the mandates, more of the lockdowns. But on the other hand, I think that idea that it was just all Trump derangement system, Trump derangement syndrome, so to say, gets exaggerated a bit in the United States, because the truth is that before lockdowns came here, a lot of Europe was already locked down, you know, from Italy, and quickly, you know, France and Germany followed, and then the United Kingdom shortly after that, and, you know, every country in Europe. And that was, you know, most of that was before it came to the United States. So this was not just because Trump was in office, you know, liberals just, you know, destroying their own states, although there was some of that. But, you know, as you were saying, the messaging was odd. You know, I think Trump's instincts, for the most part, were generally generally correct. I mean, he was just, you know, saying what the data actually showed, that this was not really, it was, you know, a bad seasonal respiratory virus, bad, worse than usual, but it was nothing really to be that concerned about. And the article is even coming from the public health community. The one who,
Let me stop. Let's say I think truth is actually somewhere between those two places, because it's a pretty nasty virus. It does a lot of damage to a lot of people, especially, of course, if you're older. But oh, shoot, I lost my train of thought. I was going to, take me to the point at which terror becomes an instrument of public health policy. My training in this area is the goal is to never induce panic, because panic always makes things worse. They did the exact opposite. It seemed like a conscious induction of panic to, in their own mind, gain control or something. When did that enter the public health lexicon, and where'd that come from?
That's right. And that remains one of the big mysteries of the story, is where did that order come from? And it came from the very beginning. You know, as soon as they made this decision to lock down in March 2020, that decision to lock down was accompanied by this vast propaganda campaign, you know, all over the Western world. You got all these catchy slogans, you know, follow the science, flatten the curve, we're all in this together. Of course, every single one of these is an outright lie. You know, it was not, you know, another one was, you know, wait 2 weeks, you know, 15 days to spread. Of course, it was not 2 weeks. It did not actually flatten the curve. You know, it was not just staying home. It was a complete suspension of everyone's rights. And of course, it was the exact opposite of real science. So that decision to terrify the public, and this is accompanied by a vast federally sponsored propaganda campaign, and you know, disclosures about that have come out within the United Kingdom and within Canada, and you know, goes to show that it's really all the Five Eyes nations, really the entire developed world, was engaging in this domestic propaganda. And you know, certain MPs in the UK and certain military officials in Canada came out and said that, you know, they didn't feel good about that decision, that was not the right thing to do. But why did they do it? Where did that order come from? I mean, that's still one of the big mysteries here, is that, you know, even for as much as I've researched this, and that's why I think it's so important to get more folks interested in the subject matter, because we still don't have an official explanation as to how these decisions were made. We get some of these, you know, little limited hangouts, these little stories that don't actually make sense about the history of social distancing, which have very little to do with the lockdowns, which were actually enacted. We have another story about how, oh, you know, you've got that propaganda story about how St. Louis shut down parades in 1918, and then they saved so many lives by shutting down parades, which, you know, has nothing to do with what the actual lockdowns, the, you know, shut down the entire world in 2020. We still have no real official explanation as to how these decisions were made and who is behind it. And you really kind of have to piece it together for yourself. I mean, people kind of make up the story for themselves, but, you know, when you look into the actual characters behind this, I mean, they had shady connections to China. Deborah Birx, the former White House coronavirus response coordinator, who actually was more responsible for lockdowns across America than Anthony Fauci. Most people don't realize that, but she was kind of orchestrating the entire thing. And you really had to kind of read her book and read other firsthand accounts to realize that. But I mean, she, you know, she says in her book right there that, you know, she lied about 15 days to slow the spread. You know, when she said that, at the time that she advised that policy, she knew it was a lie, and she knew it was always going to be much, much longer than that. It was just an excuse to get everybody to buy into the policy. And it's just unbelievable that she would make that kind of admission in her own book about the response. But I mean, that's how flagrant the lies were.
Yeah.
In the origin of these policies.
But I will tell you what I've noticed. I, I don't know how this fits into your thinking exactly, but I've noticed whenever there are these medical interventions that end up harming millions of people, look at the opioid crisis, look at psychosurgeries, lobotomies, look at the opioid crisis at the turn of the 20th century. There's many examples of these through medicine. At the core, there's always a small group of physicians who evangelize for the topic, evangelize for their intervention, for their way of looking at the world. And they, by hook or crook, gain access to the regulatory organizations, the professional organizations, the political organizations, and convince those organizations to smack down everybody else. I mean, just look at it's line and verse like the opioid crisis. It's the exact same phenomenon that happened there. You know, you had like five so-called pain doctors who convinced the VA, the Joint Commission, local medical boards, and then it sort of took off from there. Pain is the fifth vital sign. Pain control is what the patient says it is. You know, it's just on and on and on, and all the other sheep followed suit. And I was complaining about it at the time like crazy, and was crushed by four or five different regulatory organizations for daring to speak up about this. That I was a cruel person who was interested in humans suffering. That I wanted my patients to suffer. You talk about propaganda and twisting things, you know, there it was. And it just feels like the same thing again here, but on an international scale. What's your theory? What do you imagine happened?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that there were those evangelists. I mean, some of these characters had been, there was this growing field in the lead up to 2020 of this field of pandemic planning. This idea that we had to be prepared for another pandemic, like the one that supposedly happened in, you know, the Spanish flu in 1918 and some other historical pandemics like that. The origins of social distancing are shady. And you can find some bizarre influence of China there as well. The official story of how this all began doesn't really add up. But and in any event, there was an entire field of pandemic planning, which, you know, a lot of big philanthropists like Bill Gates were heavily involved in. They would do pandemic simulations every year about how they were so going to be so prepared for the next big pandemic. They're all excited about the next big pandemic. And, you know, the most notorious of these simulations was Event 201. It's a simulation of a coronavirus pandemic that takes place just like, it was, I think, 2 months before the revelation of the actual coronavirus and the, you know, pandemic that led to that we experienced in 2020. And all these high-level officials from all over the world, you had our highest intelligence official in the entire Western world, the director of national intelligence, sitting right next to China's CDC director at this Event 201, the simulation of a coronavirus pandemic that happened right before, you know, an actual, supposedly a pandemic of COVID and of a coronavirus in 2020. And yet we had no official explanation of any of this. There was a huge lead up of sort of, and there was all this evangelizing about the science of social distancing, this idea of pandemic preparedness. And they were just pushing all these ideas, which, obviously were going to do a lot of harm, this idea of lockdowns. And then once they saw the supposed success of the Chinese Communist Party's lockdown in Wuhan, of Xi Jinping's lockdown in Wuhan, you know, China essentially tells them what they want to hear, that this lockdown had succeeded in beating back this virus, that, you know, supposedly that it had reversed the curve, and through this one lockdown in Wuhan, it had just, eliminated the virus from all of China, and now the virus is receding from all of China. And so the World Health Organization, which we know is, you know, in the pocket of the Chinese Communist Party, they come out at the end of February 2020 and tell the entire world very publicly, you know, what China has shown in the world is you have to do this. If you do it, you can stop the coronavirus. You know, copy China's response to COVID-19. They can tell this to every single, you know, country all over the world. But that becomes the official guidance, this policy of lockdown, which actually had no precedent prior to that. And so they're telling these evangelists, these pandemic planning evangelists, essentially what they want to hear. It's a pretext to put all these maniacal plans into action. Of course, they know that it's going to do a lot of harm, but it's this scorched earth thing that if we do this hard enough, like China did, you know, we're going to be able to eliminate this virus too. So the propaganda campaign comes out of that, this terrorizing the entire public, domestic use of propaganda, to get a buy-in for this totalitarian policy. And you look at the irony of this, that all these supposed hawks, these national security officials all over the world, this the entire response, the initial lockdowns especially, had a major national security element that I think a lot of people aren't really aware of. They think it's, you know, Fauci and the public health guys. And they played a very bad role as well. The CDC is very responsible for a lot of this. But the national security community played a major role in those initial lockdowns, especially that initial propaganda campaign. And so you get the scorched earth event where, you know, they're implementing these policies that they know in advance. I mean, it's well documented. These policies are just going to destroy millions of lives. Just, you know, really unpredictable mental health consequences, you know, obviously devastating for small business, economically just absolutely devastating, fastest economic crash, you know, since the Great Depression. But they did it all anyway because of that sort of evangelization that, you know, yeah, we can put our pandemic plans, all our plans for how we're going to combat this big pandemic, and now it's here and we can do it. And Xi Jinping, you know, great guy, he showed us that we can, you know, eliminate the virus. So they unleashed this propaganda campaign. And obviously, when you actually stop and think about this, you go back and think about this, it's absolute nonsense. The idea that the Chinese Communist Party was able to eliminate the virus from the entire country by shutting down one city for a couple of months, but apparently nowhere outside of China. I mean, apparently the virus just jumps out to the rest of the world. I mean, it's a very smart virus, apparently, that, you know, respects national borders very well. The, you know, porous border of over a billion people, but, you know, somehow it's not in China, but all the other countries around China are just maximus cases everywhere. Absolute nonsense. So the question here is, why were so many high-level officials, I mean, the closer you get to the highest level officials in charge of the response to COVID, the closer you get to that center of power, the more likely they are to treat that obviously forged data, which I have here as the cover of my book, the more likely they are, the higher up you get, to treat that ridiculous curve as being real. I mean, here it is, you know, you see the cases going up and up and up, and then she gives the order, and then suddenly they just flatline. And that ridiculous forged data became the basis for the entire world's response. And beginning with those initial lockdowns, they knew they were going to destroy millions of lives, but it was a chance to put all their plans in action. So they did it anyway, and they got that scorched earth propaganda campaign, and it was completely ineffective. It failed, obviously. And, you know, cases just kept on coming. And so they're just flailing about, you know, with one policy after another. You know, next it's the arrows all over the ground, and then they're closing this and that and plexiglass, and you're stuffing kids in masks for years, just this, you know, in the censorship campaign. It's just insanity. But, you know, it all just comes out of that initial decision. So I really just, you know, everything I'm doing is about getting more folks interested, raising awareness, and, you know, how illiberal and bizarre that initial decision making was. And, you know, we need an official explanation for that. We need an official inquiry into how that official decision was made, because to this day we just have absolutely no idea, you know, where those orders came from. Did the military go along with this and, you know, propagandize the own public domestically to go along with these hideously illiberal policies, which is always illiberal from the very beginning? I mean, there's a lot to answer here, but, you know, every single piece of it, when you look back, is just absolutely damning about how this policy decision came about.
Well, now you've again put a little focus on it for me. So the kind of person that would go to that convention, that event 201 planning, are already enthusiast, evangelist. It's like having a religious organization get together and say, it's time. I must unleash our thing on the world. And I'm wondering if in there is where the Chinese had their way with a bunch of people. And that's why they echoed so powerfully the Chinese position, because they were already disposed by some sort of persuasion that was going on at that event. But that, to me, I mean, there's got to be other world events that have been like this. We have a bunch of people like-minded. Yes, they're scientists, but they are evangelists. They train on this one thing. The one thing magically happens 2 months later. They can't help but pull the trigger, and they do so with great enthusiasm to save the world, which is why they go into these little, you know, it's always to save the world. That's why they go into these little, these evangelical organizations like that. And
that's absolutely
just
right.
Beware, physicians. beware physicians that want to save the world, or, you know, just don't, they're no, that's not science. That's not scientists. You're just, everything is not about certainty. It's and hubris. It's about humility. And if you want to save the world, that's not a humble thought, and you may harm. And these people did. And I'm guessing that the Chinese had influence there. So things were already set up for the dominoes to fall. It's rather extraordinary when you really tell the story. I still don't get where the terror came from. Did they talk about using terror at that meeting?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, that's one of the big mysteries. You know, that's absolutely true about pandemic planning. It's just a bizarre sort of pandemic planning industry that cropped up around the early 2000s. And from the very, you know, provenance of that, the very beginning of that, you know, you find this evidence of the influence of the Chinese Communist Party on the sort of pandemic planning industry from the very advent of the idea of social distancing to these, you know, annual simulations they were having with Event 201. You know, like I said, you had the director of National Intelligence sitting right next to China's CDC director. All these sort of China-friendly folks who were just sort of groomed to take this information from China and treat them as sort of a normal government, a normal regime, when, you know, at the same time, we're getting a message that, you know, China's anything but, and very accurately. I mean, political conditions, you know, Xi Jinping was just elected unanimously 3,000-0 for a third term as a president of China. It's not a normal regime. It's very totalitarian.
3,000-0. So Michael, let me, it's comical. Let's take a little break right here. And then I want to now launch into how different the regime is and how poorly we understand it. And I'll start with sort of my sort of slow awakening to all this so you can put a finer point on it, okay?
Right, absolutely.
All right. I think you know how much Susan and I love our Genucel skincare and how easy it is to try our one-of-a-kind customer packages bundled with our favorite products. Susan realized the other day that one of our kids stole some of our deep correcting serum from our stash, if you will. We had no idea that the lactic and hyaluronic acid combo is so great for adult acne, dark marks, and scars. So not only are Susan and I hooked on these products, but apparently somebody else in our family is too. Somebody's ripping it off.
I know I'm a snob about the products I use on my face. Everybody knows it. Every time I go to the dermatologist's office, they're just rows and rows of different creams. Retinols, vitamin C cream, under eye cream, night creams.
Scrubs.
And then when I get to the counter, they're overpriced. All kinds of products that you can all find at Genucel.com. I've fallen in love with this product. At a fraction of the price. I've been using Genucel for 6 months now, and I'm very impressed.
Great skincare is important at any age, and we love how amazing the results are. Thank you to Genucel. Plus, now you can find your very own bundle based on your unique skincare needs. Using cutting-edge AI skincare technology, you can get a full skin analysis instantly and create a skincare regimen tailored towards your needs. Visit Genucel.com/Drew to check out our favorites and enter that promo code Drew, D-R-E-W, at checkout for added savings. All orders include free shipping and a free mineral mask. Order now. Go to Genucel.com/Drew. That is Genucel, G-E-N-U-C-E-L, Genucel.com/Drew. Buy gold and get a free safe to store it in. You heard right, on qualifying purchases from Birch Gold Group now through March 31st, they will ship you a free safe directly to your door. Here's the deal. Fed keeps raising rates because it is the only tool they have to keep inflation under control. But it isn't working. You can't spend your way out of inflation. And you've seen the impact on the stock market. You've seen the impact on your savings. Hedge inflation by owning gold, whether physical gold and silver in your safe or through an IRA in precious metals, where you can hold real gold and silver in tax-sheltered retirement accounts. Birch Gold has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied customers. Visit birchgold.com/Drew for your free info kit on gold and to claim eligibility for your free home safe by March 31st on qualifying purchases. Again, visit B-I-R-C-H Gold, birchgold.com/D-R-E-W. My microphone on, there we go. Of course, we're with Michael P. Singer here. The book is Snake Oil Science. And Michael, before I get into the misconceptions about the CCP. The Chinese hawks all around me are asking me, what about the 100,000 leaked emails? What about those leaked emails? Get that story. So let's get to that story, lest I drift away from it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so recently, there was a journalist in the United Kingdom who was working with the former health secretary, who is really responsible for, you know, orchestrating all the lockdowns across the United Kingdom in 2020 and 21. His name's Matt Hancock. He's quite a character. He's also caught breaking his own lockdown rules to cheat on his wife. He's a, you know, not really an A-plus guy. But anyway, this this journalist was helping him, you know, supposedly write his book. And so he started spilling the beans and, you know, trusting her and gave her access to 100,000 text messages for the purpose of drafting the book. And then she leaked them to the Telegraph. It's one of the biggest leaks of documents and the history of the United Kingdom. So it's a huge story. And it's really a look under the hood about how these decisions were being made during the lockdown in the United Kingdom. And it's really damning. You know, one of the worst is this text message comes out where Hancock is talking about when are we going to release the new variant? That he means for purposes of messaging with the AI. When are we going to release the new variant to get maximum fear out, scare the pants off the public and get them to comply with lockdowns? I mean, that is just absolutely, you think about the thinking behind that, you know, completely illiberal. They already know about this variant and they're planning strategically for when to reveal that knowledge. Is if they own that knowledge, they're going to reveal it to the public in a way that maximizes fear to get compliance with these measures. I mean, you know, absolutely horrifying. In another instance, you had, you know, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, who was a little bit like Trump. You know, he wasn't really all into the lockdown thing. And, you know, unfortunately, he didn't trust his own instincts on that, similar to, you know, how Trump was kind of railroaded into this stuff. And at one point, you know, he wants to lift some of the lockdown measures, but he's informed that, you know, it's too out of sync with public opinion. You know, so based on the public opinion polls, he reneges on his instincts and goes back on lifting those lockdowns. You know, later he's informed that, you know, the United Kingdom may announce a second strict lockdown at the end of 2020. And later Boris Johnson is informed that the data that he had made that decision on was completely wrong. So, you know, Johnson is again kind of chagrined by that. In another instance, you had the advisors to Boris Johnson, you know, the government of the United Kingdom, is talking about, you know, whether to have masks in schools, have masks on little kids in the United Kingdom, which they did that there for a little while too. And they decide that it's not worth a fight with the First Minister of Scotland, who was kind of a COVID nut herself, Nicola Sturgeon. She just recently announced her resignation. But they imposed masks. They forced all the kids in schools in the United Kingdom to wear masks because they wanted to avoid a fight with Nicola Sturgeon. She was too strong-willed for them. I mean, these are the heads of the government of the United Kingdom. You know, it's just, oh, you read that, and it's just, oh, my gosh, it's mortifying just to read about those decisions. So really, it's I mean, it's absolutely horrifying to read this stuff. It's a massive story, both in the United Kingdom and abroad, you know, how these decisions were being made. And I think it's a good thing because it's getting people's attention back on the main story here, which was those lockdowns, the mandates, you know, the masks, the vaccine passes, which were just so illiberal. And the messaging, especially the domestic propaganda, the censorship that came along with it, there were just, you know, people became so, they were only getting one side of the story and it terrified them. You know, a poll taken at one point, I think it was the end of 2020 or 2021, the average American believed this virus was 100 times deadlier than it actually was. You know, the actual fatality rate was overall about 0.2, 0.3%, much, much higher if you're older. If you're younger than 60 or 70, I think it was never higher than, you know, but it was far, far lower than 0.1%, you know, really just not deadly at all. But, you know, most Americans, according to the study, believe that, you know, if they caught COVID, you know, it would be like a 10% of times deadlier than it actually was. I mean, they were just terrified. And it was all because of these decisions that their own governments were making. It was all propaganda.
Are you going to write it, you know, another book? Is another book coming?
I'd like to, but, you know, gotta have the subject that compels me as much as snake oil. I mean, what really just inspired me to write this book, I had never written one before this, was just my passion about the subject matter. That's what got me researching and reporting.
Well, but there's more to the story since it's like you need a snake oil too. You know, there's more to the story since then. There's a lot of stuff that's come out.
Absolutely. I made a lot of discoveries since then, especially about, you know, some of the leading instigators of these policies, because that was kind of the question that, you know, where my book left off is, you know, what is the stories behind some of the lead instigators of these policies? And those are stories that have come out in other books, often ones that are mainstream, like, you know, pro-lockdown, shedding light on some of the cast of characters here. You know, we talked about Deborah Birx and how she was orchestrating lockdowns across the United States. In Italy, the story is even stranger because, you know, Italy was the first country to go into lockdown. And it all began in Lombardy, Italy. And that was actually in February 21st, 2020, is when Lombardy, Italy went into lockdown. That decision is utterly bizarre because prior to February 21st, 2020, there was nobody really in the world that you could count on, you know, one hand, the number of people who were talking about, you know, the rest of the world actually adopting China's lockdown policy. That wasn't even considered a serious, you know, conversation topic. The idea that this policy that had absolutely was completely illiberal, everybody knew it was totalitarian and barbaric, had no basis in the pandemic plans, and had no precedent in the modern Western world. Everybody saw China was doing it, and there's, you know, that's so bizarre, you know, Xi Jinping being a dictator doing his thing. Nobody was talking about the rest of the world adopting that horrific policy from China. And then suddenly, just like that, on February 21st, 2020, Lombardy adopts this policy from China and goes into. This is not only is not in a pandemic plan, it has no precedent. This is before the World Health Organization had even announced their support for the policy. There's absolutely
I think
no
I know what this was. I think I knew because I remember I was listening to communications from the Italian doctors at the time. And it was just a complete panicked response, complete. And here are the elements that they I remember thinking to myself, well, this doesn't apply to us. A, the hospital system was, at least the ICU system, was overwhelmed there, A. B, the doctors were grossly mismanaging the patients, and they were all dying. It was a mess. I could just tell. There was like one intensive care doctor for the entire region, and they didn't know what they were doing. It was a total mess. And I remember thinking at the time, I don't know, I have not looked this data up, but at least the sense I got was it was killing a lot of older women. Mom in Italy is a big deal. And when the grandmas and the moms started dying, they freaked the hell out. And there was no one there to treat them. And the hospital system was overwhelmed. Do something. Everybody stay home. And that's what it looked like to me at the time. I remember vividly assessing it and thinking, well, at least we're not going to do that. We'll take care of things. And there we went.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's absolutely right. There was some of that panic. But if you look closer, because even that panic does not excuse, you know, this policy, adopting a policy from China, which has no precedent in the Western world. I mean, no basis in the pandemic plans. That is a bizarre step to make when nobody was even entertaining that idea. So you look closer, and this is actually one of my most popular articles, and getting that story out there might be incentive to write another book on its own. But you look at the communications from the health minister in Italy who made that decision to lock down Lombardy. He was well aware that he was copying a policy from China. He made that very clear. Mm. And he actually wrote a memoir about it, which was pulled from shelves. The book was considered so hideous that they simply pulled it off of shelves all across Italy. It was only out for a few days, and you can download it and read it now, and which I did for my article. But the reason it was pulled from shelves, you know, they gave some pretextual reason, but the real reason, which everyone knows, is that he wasn't really taking it all seriously. He makes it abundantly clear throughout the entire book that he wanted to use the response to the COVID. What he's most excited about was using it to implement far-left reforms across Italy. He was a member of you know, the Young Socialist Alliance in Europe. He was you know, very transparently, you know, avid about very far-left policies. You know, he's very excited about China, you know, surreal Sinophile throughout the book. And he just did not seem to care about COVID. He actually wrote this book in 2020, you know, COVID. They were doing this whole insane response to COVID for many years after this book.
Did lockdowns really do nothing? I mean, they bought some time here and there, didn't they?
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. I think they were absolutely horrible for health. You look at, so if this virus was spreading all over the world by fall 2019. So it had the chance to spread everywhere, but it wasn't until places started these lockdowns that you actually had these big surges in deaths. We know it was spreading everywhere, but actually, you know, excess deaths until that point were actually quite normal. And everybody, you know, around January, February in 2020, was just going about daily life as normal. It was really kind of the lockdowns themselves and the absolute terror and the stress that induced and the, adverse health outcomes of that. It's not until after those lockdowns go into effect that you have these horror stories about, overflowing hospitals and messed up themselves. That's, you know, part of why this is going on so long, gotten so insane, why people are, you know, so up in arms about this, is that truth is so difficult to accept. That this policy their own government implemented, that, you know, in many cases, in most cases, I'd say, you know, they, you know, supported it to some degree. It all seemed so scary at the time, was, you know, it was that big of a policy catastrophe. It did not stop the virus. It did not slow it down in any meaningful sense. I think a study came out afterward that the lockdown slowed the spread by, I think it was like 0.1%, some absolutely meaningless numbers, an absolute policy catastrophe. That these lockdowns basically had very little effect on the spread of the virus. Meanwhile, they had all these adverse health outcomes. And frankly, I mean, they destroyed a lot of lives and did an extraordinary amount of harm in a very short time. And the reluctance of the public and leaders especially to accept that fact is what's gone on, what's, you know, responsible for so much of the insanity that we've seen in the last 3 years. And it's also why we have no real official explanation for why this has happened. We're getting it through word leaks. We still don't know how the decision was made to, you know, unleash that domestic propaganda on the public. I mean, think about that. You know, one way, whether you still don't know what to think about lockdowns or you hate lockdowns or whatever position you're on, this is a massive decision that affected, you know, millions, across the entire world, you know, billions of lives. It affected everyone in a massive way, just a huge intrusion on life in 2020 and 2021. If they were proud of the effects of that decision, if they thought it was a smashing success, wouldn't they be happy to give us a full explanation? And, you know, this is the big decision we made. I mean, these people very confidently made decisions that they knew
Burks is out there
were going to destroy millions of lives.
Singing her own praises in her book, she thinks she's a hero. You know, she's the one.
Perhaps she
look no further than there.
Does,
but we still have no official explanation. She does.
Yeah.
I only have 15 minutes left with you. I want to go back to now what we get wrong about China and what's going on in the present moment. What did we get wrong about the Chinese Communist Party and the culture there?
I mean, like you were saying earlier, I was very naive about China as well. And I think we all were. And that was really very deliberate. From when China reopened back in the 1970s, when Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger first reopened China, we did so on the idea of change through trade. China was, you know, one of the most totalitarian countries in the world. They had just, under Mao Zedong's regime, it was one of the most ruthless tyrants the entire 20th century. Really just tyrannical, long tyrannical rule. So we began engaging with China in part to form an alliance that would hasten the downfall of the Soviet Union, effective geopolitically. But at the time, we did so with both eyes open, the idea that, you know, this is still a very totalitarian country, engagement has to be limited, and we're doing so on the basis that, you know, as they advance economically through our relationship, through their relationship with us, they're going to become more like us. They're going to demand more human rights, become more liberal. So over time, the entire Western world sort of lets their guard down. As they develop relationships with China, and obviously more and more commerce, more and more industry, more and more everything starts being produced in China, these economic relations become much, much closer. And so over those decades, the story we're being told is that change through trade is a success. That, China was becoming more like us. You're getting all these, you know, you can, every business student goes and studies abroad in Shanghai, and, you know, it just looks like this great, huge success story, and it's just another part of the developed world now, and everything's normal, and you can do business there and have a lot of fun there, and just, China and the United States, we're just like peas and carrots, and it's just, they're just one of us now. But what we didn't realize was that the wool was being thrown in front of our eyes. That over those decades, you know, totalitarianism was just doing what it's doing. The Chinese Communist Party was just doing what they've always done, which is co-opting and, you know, whining and dining and getting the entire world to accept their totalitarian system and normalize that within the entire global international community. So that, you know, by the time you get to when Xi Jinping comes around, you know, every single one of our institutions, from think tanks, universities, newspapers, are all our major institutions who we rely on to tell us about the world, to paint our picture of reality, have all had these connections to the Chinese Communist Party. Or at the very least, their own financiers, the sort of billionaire class here in the United States, are so bought into China that they force, you know, elites within these other institutions speak about China as a normal global partner. And so then what happens around the 2010s is you start getting these horror stories about how, you know, suddenly start hearing about concentration camps. You're like, wait, what? They have this entire system of concentration camps. That's just, you know, bizarre. You think like, huh, that doesn't match with what I've told about change through trade. You start hearing about, you know, treaty violations in Hong Kong. I mean, Hong Kong is getting completely thrown under the bus. They were supposed to be guaranteed by treaty to maintain their democratic system, their system which ensures all their rights for 50 years. And China's Communist Party has, you know, flagrantly flouted that. And now Hong Kong is, you know, just like China. And so you start hearing about that. And, you know, that's bizarre. You know, what's going on here? The serious backslide. And of course, as we all know, Xi Jinping has declared himself dictator for life now and just declared a third term, you know, by unanimous vote. So this is not at all the picture of this changing China that we've been told throughout all these years. And then most egregiously of all, of course, in 2020, you know, the entire world suddenly adopts Xi Jinping's lockdown policy, piggybacking on this pandemic planning. But, you know, none of that was anything like this idea of, you know, forcing everybody to shut down their businesses and all these forced mandates that we suddenly got in the terror campaign in 2020. I mean, that was just, you know, unbelievable. And yet all these elite institutions, which have been so groomed throughout all these years to, you know, normalize China, are treating this ridiculously forged data from the Chinese Communist Party and their supposedly, you know, the people's super successful lockdown in Wuhan as real. So you can see how the groundwork for that was laid over years and decades normalization process, which now that the political situation in China has deteriorated so rapidly under Xi Jinping and his dictatorship that the implications of that influence, the stakes have grown much, much higher. Because before, you know, that influence is mostly about normalizing the China's totalitarian system for domestic purposes or largely for human rights purposes. And, you know, they played the game with other things as well. There's monetary policy, you know, currency manipulation. You know, obviously, climate science is a big one where they're always, you know, claiming they're going to be carbon zero and everybody around the world seriously, but it's just all just a big lie. So they're lying in all these fields. Mostly it's for domestic purposes that, you know, their human rights abuses within China are the international community turns a blind eye to them and say, you know, China is changing. So you're free to do business there. You're free to, you know, export all your industry, all this money in China, they're changing. So you can ignore all these human rights abuses. You know, the first off-ramp was really with Tiananmen Square in 1989. I mean, we were told that China was changing, but suddenly there's just this, you know, hideous massacre of thousands of their own people, just these peaceful protesters, some of their best and brightest students. That was really when the world should have taken notice that this idea of change through trade was not working, that China was not becoming like us, because they're already so invested there, because they're already making so much money, suddenly it was just business as usual. And so the whole world just, you know, goes back. And the bill for that really came due in 2020. That suddenly, you know, these institutions, elitist institutions all over the world who had been so groomed to normalize China, implement this hideously totalitarian policy. I mean, really just the most totalitarian policy that's ever been implemented, especially in the United States and really much of modern, just the modern developed world as well. I mean, and nobody is looking into China's influence on that. Why am I,
what's the next thing? Like,
right.
What's the next step? It begs the question. Read his mind.
Something this horrific, like adopting Xi Jinping's lockdown policy, and the obvious question that arises from that is, what was the Chinese Communist Party's influence on the global adoption of Xi Jinping's policy that was so catastrophic? That seems to be the obvious question there. And yet none of our institutions seem to be taking that question seriously. So you look all over the major media outlets, that question is just non-existent. I've just been completely whitewashed. There's nobody looking into it. I mean, people hope that our intelligence agencies are, but, you know, I follow the National Security Committee. There's no suggestion that they are as well. They have to get their orders from the executive, which is influenced by public opinion. If they have no incentive to do that, you know, they're not going to look into it as well. So this very obvious question, this mountain of evidence that the Chinese Communist Party did had a major influence on the global adoption of this lockdown policy, has been, there's just this silence, this void around it. And the void around that extraordinarily important part of the story is largely what's responsible for the bizarre sort of surreality, this false reality that we've been experiencing for the last 3 years, because they'll dance around it. You know, they have the New York Times, you know, publishing the well-written, intellectual articles, but, you know, acting like China's response, their data is real, that, you know, this virus, they did actually eliminate it within all of China by shutting down this one city. This absolutely silly narrative and this otherwise, you know, intellectual sounding articles. So maintaining that false reality, because to please the Chinese Communist Party, is responsible for so much of the insanity that we experienced right here at home for the last 3 years. The economic relations that are being maintained by our billionaire class, you know, nearly all of them are bought into it. I think for normal people, it's like, okay, we understand that decoupling from China, we're going to take a hit in stock prices. But, you know, for a big political event like that, we understand that a major country backslides into totalitarianism, that's what you have to do. For the billionaire class, it's much, much more than that. You know, in some cases, that's, you know, 80, 90% of their wealth. In some cases, you know, they could even face bankruptcy. They're very, very reluctant to do that. And so they kowtow to the Chinese Communist Party, the things that they really care about, which is, you know, the response to COVID. And that is completely kept out. They've created this taboo around what to me is one of the most important questions in the world today, is how the Chinese Communist Party influenced that lockdown policy. That's simply taboo. And they do have a red line.
Well, I wonder if also you zeroed in on who systematically crushed the lab leak hypothesis, who was being influenced to push that propaganda, whether that would be the same people that you're looking for that would help explain why the lockdown became pervasive. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. There's some of that. There's absolutely been Chinese Communist Party influence on the lab leak theory. But in my experience, you know, the mainstream media is much more inclined to engage with that subject because there's less at stake there. Because a lab leak, you know, that's bad for China. It's bad for the handful of scientists who, you know, have so much anger at those scientists for supposedly covering up this theory. But that's not going to endanger their financial connections with China, where they're making all their money. There's a different degree. You know, you can still hear about that lab leak story in the mainstream media. There's been plenty of mainstream articles written about it. You'll know about that. The bigger question to me, and where the most damage was done, was in importing these policies in response to the virus from the Chinese Communist Party, especially those initial lockdowns, but also, you know, you'll find influence on all the rest of the mandates as well. The testing, the ventilators, which killed so many people, especially in those initial days before a grassroots campaign put a stop to it. That's simply considered a taboo because it's so awful for the Chinese Communist Party. And stop and think about that. If something is taboo just because it's bad for the Chinese Communist Party, then what does that mean about all this hawkishness of China? Do they even mean what they say? If they're not even going to look into the worst things that the Chinese Communist Party is doing in the world, and how can we take them seriously in all their hawkishness of China? This is very, you know, difficult to wrap your mind around, but the people pretend to be so hawkish about China. You know, they're getting all these warnings. You know, there's the Chinese spy balloon. You know, there's all this theater about how, you know, we're taking on the Chinese. And the Chinese play into it as well. You know, they issued these very public, you know, announcements of the lab leak theory. And, oh, you know, we are so upset about your lab leak. They say it in their own state media outlets every single day. But meanwhile, the real story here, the far more damaging one, is simply a taboo. You simply won't hear about it in any major media outlet. I mean, and that's why my work has been so fruitful, is because this entire story just right there under the surface. You know, the fact that all these measures, the lockdowns, the testing, the, you know, mandates, the fact that you have China's paw prints on the origin of every single one of these policies is just right there under the surface, but it's simply not being reported. Because that's just so damaging to the Chinese Communist Party, and the financiers of our elite institutions stand so much to lose from that. So we're at this strange juncture now where, you know, everyone knows that the Chinese Communist Party is backsliding into totalitarianism. They don't even, you know, really try to hide it. Xi Jinping is, you know, the most hawkish, ruthless leader since Mao Zedong. He's just declared himself dictator for life. They have concentration camps. You know, he just makes it very clear that he doesn't think that capitalism and communism can coexist, and he sees it as his duty to make sure that communism, you know, engulfs the entire world. These things are very transparent, but you have our own elite saying, no, 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 no. You know, that's, yeah, we're taking it seriously. You know, we're going to take it seriously.
We'll get through that.
Taiwan, they have their, yeah. But they make it sound like
I wouldn't want to be Japan or Taiwan.
Right. They're doing everything in their power to whitewash this story, so that they're not forced to decouple from China and lose their investments there. And that's creating the false reality that's responsible for the
narrative. Susan wants to know if we, in the Ukraine war, did nothing other than push Russia into the hands of China, the arms of China.
It's certainly possible. And you see that, you know, clear as day, that game that they're playing there as well. You have all the think tanks and, you know, all the, you know, stooges of our own sort of billionaire class here insisting that no, China is our buddies. They got our back. They're not supporting Russia, you know. And meanwhile, you know, Xi Jinping, the Chinese Communist Party, is saying the exact opposite. Like, no, we support Russia. I mean, they're sending them arms. It's, you know, clear as day. And so you see that game where it's our own elites, you know, for lack of a better word, lying to us about, you know, how bad things have gotten in China, how much China has deteriorated. They're throwing the wool under their over our eyes because they're so afraid of losing their investments there.
I may have to bring you back to get further down this rabbit hole.
You got to the good stuff in the last minute.
Well, Susan, I wonder, before I wrap it up, is there anything you want to ask?
I feel like it's smoke and mirrors, you know, like we're going around in circles over here about the lab leak still. Well, he's off doing something else that's even going to be more nefarious down the road. And I, you know, because, you know, that I always feel like you should be looking to his next move. And it looks like to me that he's trying to get world domination, and he's weakening America. He's done a good job. We're all just kind of going, wow, what just happened? But it took us 3 years to figure it out. Meanwhile, who knows what the next thing is going to be?
What happened with the response to COVID and those lockdowns really weakened America. I think even more so than that, the primary goal there was simply to seed, you know, a certain degree of totalitarianism in our everyday lives. You have people getting comfortable lying about something really, really big, the idea that there's a super virus and it justifies this definite state of emergency, all these illiberal policies. You know, that's Xi Jinping's vision, is that people will embrace totalitarianism on their own, that it won't need this entire world war, that China's influence will simply cause the world to embrace this totalitarian communist system. And so, you know, in the meantime, everything you're being told about China, these stories, this Chinese spy balloon, the, you know, the lab leak to some degree, a lot of it is just theater. It's what our elites are comfortable telling us is, you know, China is doing this stuff, and everybody, obviously they can't hide how much the situation in China is backsliding politically, but they're not telling us the worst thing that the Chinese Communist Party is doing. And that's absolutely terrifying, because as we saw with lockdowns, I mean, it's a lot worse than people realize.
If you want to hear more, it's Michael Senger, senger.substack.com, and on Twitter at Michael P. Senger, senger. Michael, it's always fascinating slash hair raising to have a conversation with you.
Thank you so much.
We're going to have you back as more comes up in the news and we need to like.
Yes.
Assure
perfect. Yes, my pleasure.
The world's not coming to an end.
Yeah, Susan needs to. She will not sleep this week. This week, she'll read. She's been reading your book on and off. Like she rereads it and rereads it and goes back to it. And it's been sitting
well,
next
thank
to
you
our.
Both so much.
It's
I'm not
good
kidding.
History.
It's very flattering.
History.
I really. Yeah,
it's been sitting next to our television that. since we last talked to you, and that was what probably 14 months ago or something. Was it that long ago?
Yeah. And, oh, I appreciate that so much. Yeah.
So, and we've been sort of filling in our own, trying to understand what's been going on. And slowly but surely, I'm gaining a clearer and clearer sense of
things. We'll have you back. Just, you know, anytime you want to come on.
Yeah, anytime you have something to promote, let us know. We'll bring you back in. But I got to wrap it up today. I appreciate you being here. Thank you very much, Michael Sanger.
Thank you, Drew. Thank you both so much.
Appreciate it. And we're going to get out of here quickly as well today. Tomorrow, we have... Dr. Mackies, as we said, Gadsad on the 21st, and Vicky Malley or Mail, I don't pronounce him, on Thursday.
Mail.
Okay, we'll see you then. Ask Dr. Drew is produced by Caleb Nation and Susan Pinsky. As a reminder, the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care, diagnosis, or treatment. This show is intended for educational and informational purposes only. I am a licensed physician, but I am not a replacement for your personal doctor, and I am not practicing medicine here. Always remember that our understanding of medicine and science is constantly evolving. Though my opinion is based on the information that is available to me today, some of the contents of this show could be outdated in the future. Be sure to check with trusted resources in case any of the information has been updated since this was published. If you or someone you know is in immediate danger, don't call me, call 911. If you're feeling hopeless or suicidal, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. You can find more of my recommended organizations and helpful resources at drdrew.com/help.